My next guest is simply amazing. So amazing that a former governor of Illinois decided that March 27th should officially be her day. Not only that, there's also a street in Chicago named in her honor. She has worked with some of Hollywood's heaviest hitters, such as Sidney Poitier, Ruby Dee, and Cicely Tyson. Her Chicago-based theater company has been going strong for 45 years. She was awarded an honorary doctorate from DePaul University, in addition to the many awards and accolades that she has been given over the years. And I will be the first to tell you, she has no plans on retiring, ever. Coming up next on the 40 Plus Files, the one and only Dr. Jackie Taylor. Welcome to the show, Dr. Taylor. How are you?
Oh, Jacqueline, I'm absolutely fabulous.
Well, you look fabulous too. Fabulous. So I have to start out by saying that not only are we namesakes, we have the same spelling of our name. Okay.
Yes.
Because over the years, people have come up with some pretty interesting ways to spell Jacqueline and Jackie, let me tell you. Not only that, but we are both Leos and our birthdays are one day apart. I'm August 9th and you're August 10th.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so that only means one thing in my mind, that at some point in the future, we have to celebrate together.
That sounds good to me.
Okay. So one of the first things I always ask my guests is, how did you view aging when you were in your 20s? The show is called The 40 Plus Files. So how did you view aging when you were in your 20s?
I did not. And in your 20s, I know for me, in my 20s, I started Black Ensemble when I was 23.
Wow.
I had my daughter when I was when I was 20. I mean, so I didn't think about aging. I thought about how to take care of my family. I thought about how to move my theater forward, how to make it successful. I wasn't thinking about getting older. I was thinking about how to continue to make my life successful.
Absolutely. And I think that's common with most of the women that I talk to about that question, because in your 20s, you know, we're kind of carefree unless you're Jackie Taylor, and then you are you are juggling so many other things. But what was your biggest epiphany after turning 40, if you had an epiphany? Because at 30, the light bulb comes on for most of us. And then at 40, there's a whole new illumination. Did that happen for you?
No. I don't think in terms of numbers. So, no, there was no epiphany in terms of age. It was, okay, I'm 40. What have I accomplished? What else do I want to accomplish? And how do I continue to be successful? Those were always the motivating factors for me. It's not about how much time, it's about what you do with the time.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and you've actually done so much from an early age. So your acting tenure goes back a long way. You graduated from Loyola in 1973, and then you landed the role of Johnny May in one of my favorite movies, Coolie High, which has now become a cult classic. How did you get that role?
I'm an actress. I auditioned. I heard that, you know, I called my agent and I grew up in Cabrini. So it was a no-brainer for me, even though I was not a teenager, of course, at the time. I was well into my 20s, but I knew that I could play that role. And I auditioned and was blessed to get a major role in with the cast.
Absolutely. And like I said, it's a classic now. And I have a pretty funny story about that movie, because, you know, when I grew up, everyone I knew was aware of that movie. And when I met my husband, he's a little bit younger than me, so he had never seen Coolie High. I was like, what? Stop the presses. Okay. The first thing you're going to do is watch this movie. So that was one of the first things that I had him do, because I felt like you're Black and you've never seen Cooley High. Okay, so.
Shame on you. Get out there and see that movie.
Right, right. So you got the role of Johnny May, of course, and you played Cochise's girlfriend, Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, who played Cochise, and you worked alongside Glenn Turman, who played Preach. So after that, of course, I'm sure offers started rolling in, but you made a decision to kind of turn down roles that were degrading to you.
Yes. I had taught school prior to that, and I had taught in Cabrini. I had taught self-love, the greatness inside of us all, self-respect, respect for others, and how to move forward beyond poverty, beyond the mindset of you'll never achieve or you'll never be anything, because that is prevalent in some communities. And so, yes, the roles that they wanted me to play were opposite those messages. And I knew that my students wouldn't be able to decipher Miss Taylor, the actress, from Miss Taylor, the teacher. And I did not want to do that to my community. You know, it's more than just me. This is a perpetuation of negativity that has gone on for 450 years. And I wasn't going to add to it, not for any kind of money in the world. So I was lucky enough that there were roles that were not demeaning, that were meaningful and luscious, and I got to work with some wonderful people. But those, the gangbanger's girlfriend and the gun too, whatever her name was, and that script, I don't even remember. But those kind of things I refuse to do, because I am not part of the problem. I am part of the solution.
I love it. I love it. And I think that's a huge responsibility for especially Black entertainers to have, because you were working with young children, and eventually I'm pretty sure you thought that they would see those movies, and you did not want to represent that something negative to them. So of course, after you did the movie Cooley High, you had some more acting engagements. Then you founded the Black Ensemble Theater in 1976. So your goal then, and probably still now, is to eradicate racism. Why was that your goal back then? It may seem like an obvious question.
Well, first of all, I had lived with it all my life, as we all do as people, whether we're Black or white, it doesn't matter. We are in a highly racist society that was built on systemic racism. So, and I experienced all the negatives that it could bring, and I recognized them from living in very challenging conditions, from schools being substandard, from people's assumptions of who I was and what I was. And I decided that I wanted to do something about it, not just talk about it or try to fit in, but to actually do something. And I started the Black Ensemble Theater because theater is what is my background. That's what I knew. And not only in terms of racism, but I wanted to provide opportunities. I wanted to provide jobs. I wanted to increase community wealth. And those were my goals and objectives, and those are still my goals and objectives.
Absolutely. Because I think a lot of people, especially back in the 70s, did have sort of a negative view of pretty much everyone who grew up in public housing. And I think we talked about that too with the show Good Times. I think the intention was there. The good intentions were there from the writer of the show, Eric Monte, who had also grown up in Cabrini Green. I think that show kind of went left after a while. Right?
Yes, it went left. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
So with the Black Ensemble Theater, obviously you have created and you have written well over 100 plays. You wrote your very first play at 8 years old called The Swinging Wizard of Oz. What inspired you to become a storyteller and why was it important to tell our stories?
Well, first of all, I had to tell our stories because those are the only stories that I know.
Mm-hmm.
because, you know, a writer writes from their point of view. And if you're not, then you're not a good writer. I was always a writer. I can't say, oh, this hit me or that hit me or no. Even before I could write, I was writing. my mother, I remember, she had a closet full of papers that she had written. I don't know what was on them to this day. I don't know what was on them. But when she would write, I would write. Now, that was before I knew what writing was, but I would say it out loud. And they were stories. They were stories.
Wow.
So I would say that it's a gift. It's a gift from the creators. And when you're given a gift, you must use it.
Absolutely. I definitely believe that, especially in your case. You're definitely a gifted playwright. So speaking of those plays, The Other Cinderella is one of your most famous works. Obviously, it was not your first play. Talk about the inspiration behind that play.
Well, I was teaching school, and I had a group of second graders who had failed. And I was a new teacher, so I made most of the mistakes that new teachers make. And my class was just becoming unmanageable. And I was trying to teach some reading skills. And the class would not focus. They would not listen. And I just threw up my hands and I fell down in my seat and said, boy, you know what? I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I know what I'm doing is wrong because I'm not getting the results that I need. So, okay, we're gonna pretend this is the first day. We're going to start all over again. I said, because it's my job to ensure that you are learning. And right now, you're not learning anything. I said, so how should we go about this? What should we do? What do you want to do? And one little girl said, I want to be Cinderella. I want to do Cinderella because Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella had just been on television. And so I said, okay, we can do Cinderella. I said, but we're not going to do that Cinderella that you saw on TV. I said, we're going to do the other Cinderella. And that was the beginning of that script, The Other Cinderella, with those second graders. And through that script, I learned a whole lot through writing that script with them. And I learned how to make my lessons three-dimensional. I learned how to have my class teach each other rather than me standing up there trying to be the director, as all teachers are. But you got to ensure that the class is engaged and a participant, not passive, but a strong participant. And through that, I taught reading. They jumped 2 grades in their discourse.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So just presenting that idea from a different perspective, really from their perspective.
Right.
Kind of changed the whole trajectory of their lives, basically, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. And that just speaks to the importance of making sure that we reach children and meet them where they are. And that's how they flourish.
Right. And not limit them.
Absolutely.
In accordance with our limitations.
Absolutely.
Or what they scored on a test. But to allow them, no matter what it is, it might seem impossible to you. But if they have thought of it, or if they say, I think I can do this, or then they must flourish. Give them the opportunity to do what it is that they say they can do.
Absolutely. Wow. So not only have you been an educator, and you have definitely shown that you have greatness in that area, you have also worked with some of the greatest actors and actresses in Hollywood: Sidney Poitier, Cicely Tyson, Ruby Dee, and Ozzie Davis. What did you learn from them?
Oh my goodness. I did not work with Ozzie. I was around him. I worked with Ruby.
Okay.
But I learned so much. I had a dinner party for Ruby Dee, and I learned then that her graciousness, her royalty, the strength that she had in being African-American, in being Black, was astounding. And I truly wanted to emulate that. I respected her so much, because she also, as well as Cicely Tyson, refused roles that would degrade African-American people.
Mm-hmm.
And from Miss Tyson, I learned the ability to live beyond numbers. It's not about a number. It's not about an age. It's about what you have accomplished. And she had so much dignity and strength. Oh, my goodness. I think if I had to make a choice of who I learned the most from, it would have to be Sidney Poitier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I worked with Mr. Poitier a couple of times in a couple of films that one he directed and one he directed and starred in. And so I got to work with him for a while. And he taught me the world from another dimension. This, from his eyes, I learned to see how great we are and how small we are in comparison to the galaxies, in comparison to what is out there. It's limitless, and we've only touched the surface of it. He had so much patience. He shared the spotlight. He didn't, you know, it wasn't, I'm the star, you know, it wasn't any of that. It was, we're all in this together. We're the same. We're, you know, it's no hierarchy here. We're all doing our jobs, and we're going to do a great job. But the wisdom that he had as a human being, or that he has, because he's still with us at 90, I think he's 94 or 90, mm-hmm. something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, he's just, I can't say enough. I know that working with him really charged me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a giant in the industry, as was Cicely Tyson. You know, she was just a queen. But you've worked with both Ruby Dee and Sidney Poitier. A Raisin in the Sun is like one of my all-time favorite works. Just to see them on screen is just magical to me. You started out in the industry pretty much in the early 70s. How has the industry changed to you?
It's changed and it's remained the same.
Okay.
I grew up working during Black exploitation, where the films were just so very anti-Black, perpetuating every negative stereotype that you can possibly imagine, and facilitating the idea that we as Black people are worthless, lazy, gangbangers, dope dealers, prostitutes. And it was, you know, I mean, we had heroes, you know, like Superfly was a hero, but Superfly was a dope deal, you know. Very few movies at that time slipped through. Claudine slipped through. Cooley High slipped through. Today, we have Black producers, Black directors, Black writers, and so we're getting more, our images have been much more representative of who we really are as a people. Our history is being represented, our culture is being represented in a very positive and strong way through our wonderful directors and producers like Denzel Washington, Spike Lee, and I could name more that are just out there creating and doing wonderful work that benefits the community.
Absolutely.
On the other hand, when I look at what's popular on TV, when I see different shows, and I'm not going to name them, and the only reason that I even see them is I go to my daughter's house and she's looking at trash. And I sit there 5 minutes and I say, nope, you're going to have to turn it back on when mother leaves. But I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear it. Where we're just acting just like total idiots, perpetuating this image of self-destruction, of backbiting, of women against women. And those images are still very prevalent, and they're making a lot of money off of those images. So one hand, you have the Denzels, and then on the other hand, you have buffoonery. And our younger people tend to look at the buffoonery. They tend to go toward those negative messages. Because it's in the music, it's in front of them on 2020 channels, which I will never understand why we need all of that. and you know, the internet, where you can just pull up whatever the hell you want, and there it is. So they, you know, they're exposed to a lot. And so I say, one hand, we've come a long way. And on the other hand, we have a long, long way to go.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that generationally, because we live in such a youth-driven culture, that on one hand, I think creators feel like they have to cater to the younger generation. But like you said, that there are more of us behind the camera now. So that makes a huge difference.
Right.
One of my favorite works by Toni Morrison is an essay that she wrote called Playing in the Dark. And she talks about how, you know, over the years, how white people have tried to create Black characters and they may not have been successful in that. I mean, we know they were not successful. So I think it's important that we tell our stories. And I know that you are all about that. So back in 2009, then Governor Pat Quinn declared March 27th, Jackie Taylor Day. You have a street named in your honor, Beacon Street here in Chicago, and you're the president of the African American Arts Alliance of Chicago. The awards and accolades are abundant. Do you feel like you have made it?
Made it to what? I don't even know what that means. I mean, you know, it's very nice to get recognition, of course. And I do appreciate recognition. But in terms of making it, I don't think about it in that term. There's no finite stop. The work continues. And the work must continue beyond me, beyond generations. So you know, I'm proud of my accomplishments. I'm proud that they weren't made in isolation. There's a lot of people who have helped and supported and also are a part of whatever success that I have garnered. But no, I don't feel like I've made it. I feel like it's a lot of work to be done. And I want to make sure that when my cycle of working toward our mission and our goals in life has transitioned, that those goals and missions continue to move forward, because it's not about a person. It's about a movement.
Mm-hmm.
And the baton has to be passed so that the movement can continue.
Absolutely. I love that. What is your passion? What would you say your passion is?
My passion is giving.
Mm-hmm.
It is giving.
I can definitely see that. You have given back so much just to your community alone. What do you think some of the biggest advantages of doing what you do at your age are? What are some of the biggest advantages of doing what you do now at your age? And what are some challenges?
Well, I'm 70.
Mm-hmm. And you look amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'll just say that. But this country is very anti elder,
mm-hmm.
very, in terms of how we treat senior citizens, mm-hmm. how we respect senior citizens, how we view senior citizens. And that is so unwise, because the wisest of the group are the ones who have been around the longest.
Yes.
And experienced the most. So the challenge is, don't believe the hype. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Just because they say, oh, you're too old for that, or, oh, you're not acting your age, or whatever the hell the idiom might be. Don't, no matter how old you are, don't fall into that nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take care of your body. You have to eat well.
Mm-hmm.
You have to eat healthy. You have to drink clean water.
Mm-hmm.
You have to exercise. Those are the things that you must do in order to continue to be strong into your 70s, into your 80s, into your 90s. You must keep active.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they would remove the word retirement from the vocabulary, because mm-hmm. if you're alive, you should never retire.
Mm.
You should always be active. You should always be doing. You should always be, you know, it might not be in a 9-to-5 job or anything mm-hmm. like that, but retire just reflects such a negative image in terms of what are you doing with your life. So I wish they would just strike that word from the vocabulary. But the challenge is moving through all, because, you know, you're bombarded with youth. You're bombarded with these images. You're bombarded with these messages. They're sometimes they're subtext, and you have to read through lines, but they're there and they're subliminal, and they get trapped, and we start believing them.
Mm-hmm.
We start, you know, picking them up. I'm too old for that. I'm not. Don't tell me. I'm still kicking my leg. And ha!
That's right. That's right. Oh, my goodness. Yes. That leads me to my next question. What advice do you have for women who are close to turning 40, or women who are over 40 and believe that their best years are behind them? Because some people do get to a point where they're like, well, I didn't get a chance to do that, so, oh, well, I guess I'll never do it. What advice do you have for women like that?
My advice would be stop making excuses for yourself. Just stop. Age, we all age. Mm-hmm. We all age. Yeah. If we use that as a reason for, that means we don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Age don't have anything to do with it. But it's a nice way to try and stop yourself. Give yourself a reason. When I say age is just a number, that's all it is. Mm-hmm. It's a number. And if you're going to take that number and make it into how you exist based off of the masses in this country, because in other countries, age is a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And it's respected and it's worshiped, you know. But here is something else. Stop thinking about yourself as a number. Mm-hmm. You're not a number. You are a person. You have choices. And it's not based on the number. It's based on the kind of choices that you make in your life.
Absolutely.
So if you make the kind of choices that are going to push your body to a not well state or slow your mind down, if you make those kind of choices, it has nothing to do with your age. Mm-hmm. So I would say stop living in age and start living in choices.
Absolutely. Definitely a mindset. I know that you have to get out of here soon, but I want to ask you this. You were asked in a previous interview what you wanted the history books to say about you. And you said that you wanted the books to say, she came, she saw, she conquered. Is that still true?
Absolutely. And I would add the byline, and she had a whole lot of fun doing it.
I love it. I love it. So how can people find you or get in touch with you? I know that there's the Black Ensemble Theater and it has social medias. Any particular way people can get in touch?
Well, of course, through my website. Mm-hmm. Through the Black Ensemble Theater website. I don't have a personal website. but through Black Ensemble's website, or my email is Jackie Taylor Star. All spelled out, star is one word, Jackie Taylor Star at blackensemble.org.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your 40 plus power with us today, Dr. Taylor. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Jackie Taylor is the proud CEO and founder of the Black Ensemble Theater in Chicago, Illinois. For show tickets or to offer support, please visit blackensembletheater.org. And for more information about the African American Arts Alliance of Chicago, please visit aaachicago.org. Mr. Sidney Poitier passed away shortly after the taping of this podcast. Not only did he leave an indelible mark on Dr. Jackie Taylor, he left one on the world.